Chapter 3. Man in China has made more voyages up into the moon than myself. I cannot but give you some account of the easiness of the passage, as well as of the country. Nor are his wonderful telescopes of a mean quality, by which such plain discoveries are made, of the lands and seas in the moon, and in all the habitable planets, that one may as plainly see what a clock it is by one of the dials in the moon, as if it were no farther off than Windsor Castle. And had he lived to finish the speaking trumpet which he had contrived to convey sound thither, Harlequin's mock trumpet had been a fool to it. And it had no doubt been an admirable experiment, to have given us a general advantage from all their acquired knowledge in those regions, where no doubt several useful discoveries are daily made by the men of thought for the improvement of all sorts of humane understanding, and to have discoursed with them on those things, must have been very pleasant, besides, its being very much to our particular advantage. I confess, I have thought it might have been very useful to this nation, to have brought so wonderful an invention hither, and I was once very desirous to have set up my rest here, and for the benefit of my native country, have made myself master of these engines, that I might in due time have conveyed them to our Royal Society, that once in 40 years they might have been said to do something for public good. And that the reputation and usefulness of the so-sos might be recovered in England. But being told that in the moon there were many of these glasses, to be at very cheap, and I having declared my resolution of undertaking a voyage thither, I deferred my design, and shall defer my treating of them, till I give some account of my arrival there. But above all his inventions for making this voyage, I saw none more pleasant or profitable than a certain engine formed in the shape of a chariot, on the backs of two vast bodies with extended wings, which spread about 50 yards in breadth, composed of feathers so nicely put together that no air could pass. And as the bodies were made of lunar earth which would bear the fire, the cavities were filled with an ambient flame, which fed on a certain spirit deposited in a proper quantity, to last out the voyage. And this fire, so ordered as to move about such springs and wheels as kept the wings in a most exact and regular motion, always ascendant. Thus the person being placed in this airy chariot, drinks a certain dozing draught, that throws him into a gentle slumber, and dreaming all the way, never wakes till he comes to his journey's end. Of the Consolidator. These engines are called in their country language, Dupicuses, and according to the ancient Chinese, or Tartarian, Apazolanthukinists, in English, a Consolidator. The composition of this engine is very admirable, for, as is before noted, 'tis all made up of feathers, and the quality of the feathers is no less wonderful than their composition, and therefore, I hope the reader will bear with the description for the sake of the novelty, since I assure him such things as these are not to be seen in every country. The number of feathers are just 513. They are all of a length and breadth exactly, which is absolutely necessary to the floating figure, or else one side or any one part being wider or longer than the rest, it would interrupt the motion of the whole engine. Only there is one extraordinary feather which, as there is an odd one in the number, is placed in the center, and is the handle, or rather rudder to the whole machine. This feather is every way larger than its fellows, 'tis almost as long and broad again, but above all, its quill or head is much larger, and it has as it were several small bushing feathers round the bottom of it, which all make but one presiding or superintendent feather, to guide, regulate, and pilot the whole body. Nor are these common feathers, but they are picked and culled out of all parts of the lunar country by the command of the prince, and every province sends up the best they can find, or ought to do so at least, or else they are very much to blame for the employment they are put to being of so great use to the public, and the voyager flight so exceeding high. It would be very ill done if, when the king sends his letters about the nation, to pick him up the best feathers they can lay their hands on, they should send weak, decayed, or half-grown feathers, and yet sometimes it happened so, and once there was such rotten feathers collected, whether it was a bad year for feathers, or whether the people that gathered them had a mind to abuse their king, but the feathers were so bad, the engine was good for nothing, but broke before it was got halfway, and by a double misfortune, this happened to be at an unlucky time, when the king himself had resolved on a voyage, or flight to the moon, but being deceived, by the unhappy miscarriage of the deficient feathers, he fell down from so great a height, that he struck himself against his own palace, and beat his head off. Nor had the sons of this prince much better success, though the first of them was a prince mightily beloved by his subjects. But his misfortunes chiefly proceeded from his having made use of one of the engines so very long, that the feathers were quite worn out, and good for nothing. He used to make a great many voyages and flights into the moon, and then would make his subjects give him great sums of money, to come down to them again. And yet they were so fond of him, that they always complied with him, and would give him everything he asked, rather than to be without him. But they grew wiser since. At last, this prince used his engine so long, it could hold together no longer, and being obliged to write to his subjects to pick him out some new feathers, they did so, but withal sent him such strong feathers, and so stiff, that when he had placed them in their proper places, and made a very beautiful engine, it was too heavy for him to manage. He made a great many essays at it, and had it placed on the top of an old idol chapel, dedicated to an old Brahmin saint of those countries, called Fantastainship, in Latin, Chap. De Saint Stephano, or in English, Saint Stephens. Here the prince tried all possible contrivances, and a vast deal of money it cost him, but the feathers were so stiff they would not work, and the fire within was so choked, and smothered with its own smoke, for want of due vent and circulation, that it would not burn, so he was obliged to take it down again, and from thence he carried it to his college of Brahmin priests, and set it up in one of their public buildings. There he drew circles of ethics and politics, and fell to casting of figures and conjuring, but all would not do, the feathers could not be brought to move, and, indeed, I have observed, that these engines are seldom helped by art and contrivance. There is no way with them, but to have the people spoke to get good feathers, and they are easily placed, and perform all the several motions with the greatest ease and accuracy imaginable. But it must be all nature, anything of force distorts and dislocates them, and the whole order is spoiled, and if there be but one feather out of place, or pinked, or stands wrong, the DL would not ride in the chariot. The prince thus finding his labor in vain, broke the engine to pieces, and sent his subjects word, what bad feathers they had sent him. But the people, who knew it was his own want of management, and that the feathers were good enough, only a little stiff at first, and with good usage would have been brought to be fit for use, took it ill, and never would send him any other, as long as he lived. However, it had this good effect upon him, that he never made any more voyages to the moon, as long as he reigned. His brother succeeded him. And truly he was resolved upon a voyage to the moon, as soon as ever he came to the crown. He had met with some unkind usage from the religious lunacies of his own country, and he turned Abogratzearian, a zealous fiery sect something like our anti-everybody-arians in England. His confist, some of the Brahmins of his country, were very false to him. Put him upon several ways of extending his power over his subjects, contrary to the customs of the people, and contrary to his own interest. And when the people expressed their dislike of it, he thought to have been supported by those clergymen, but they failed him, and made good that old English verse, that priests of all religions are the same. He took this so heinously, that he conceived a just hatred against those that had deceived him, and as resentments seldom keep rules, unhappily entertained prejudices against all the rest, and not finding it easy to bring all his designs to pass better, he resolved upon a voyage to the moon. Accordingly, he sends a summons to all his people according to custom, to collect the usual quantity of feathers for that purpose. And because he would be sure not be used as his brother and father had been, he took care to send certain cunning men express, all over the country, to bespeak the people's care, in collecting, picking, and culling them out. These were called in their language, Sapa Blesdatu, which being translated may signify in English, men of zeal, or booted apostles. Nor was this the only caution this prince used, for he took care, as the feathers were sent up to him, to search and examine them one by one in his own closet, to see if they were fit for his purpose. But, alas, he found himself in his brother's case exactly, and perceived that his subjects were generally disgusted at his former conduct, about Abragratzianism, and such things, and particularly set in a flame by some of their priests, called Dalabardians, or passive obedience men, who had lately turned their tail, and their tail too upon their own princes. And upon this, he laid aside any more thoughts of the engine, but took up a desperate and implacable resolution, viz. To fly up to the moon without it. In order to this, abundance of his cunning men were summoned together to assist him, strange engines contrived, and methods proposed, and a great many came from all parts, to furnish him with inventions and equivalent for their journey, but all were so preposterous and ridiculous, that his subjects, seeing him going on to ruin himself, and by consequence them too, unanimously took arms. And if their prince had not made his escape into a foreign country, 'tis thought they would have secured him for a madman. And here 'tis observable, that as it is in most such cases, the mad counselors of this prince, when the people begun to gather about him, fled, and every one shifted for themselves. Nay, and some of them plundered him first of his jewels and treasure, and never were heard of since. From this prince none of the kings or government of that country have ever seemed to incline to the hazardous attempt of the voyage to the moon, at least not in such a hare-brained manner. However, the engine has been very accurately rebuilt and finished, and the people are now obligated by a law to send up new feathers every 3 years, to prevent the mischiefs which happened by that prince aforesaid, keeping one set so long that it was dangerous to venture with them, and thus the engine is preserved fit for use. And yet has not this engine been without its continual disasters, and often out of repair? For though the kings of the country, as has been noted, have done riding on the back of it, yet the restless courtiers and ministers of state have frequently obtained the management of it, from the too easy goodness of their masters, or the evils of the times. To cure this, the princes frequently changed hands, turned one set of men out and put another in. But this made things still worse, for it divided the people into parties and factions in the state, and still the strife was, who should ride in this engine. And no sooner were these skeet riders got into it, but they were for driving all the nation up to the moon. But of this by itself, authors differ concerning the original of these feathers, and by what most exact hand they were first appointed to this particular use. And as their original is hard to be found, so it seems a difficulty to resolve from what sort of bird these feathers are obtained. Some have named one, some another, but the most learned in those climates call it by a hard word, which the printer having no letters to express, and being in that place hieroglyphical, I can translate no better than by the name of a collective. This must be a strange bird without doubt. It has heads, claws, eyes, and teeth innumerable, and if I should go about to describe it to you, the history would be so romantic, it would spoil the credit of these more authentic relations which are yet behind. 'Tis sufficient, therefore, for the present, only to leave you this short abridgment of the story, as follows. This great monstrous bird, Call it a collective, is very seldom seen, and indeed never, but upon great revolutions, and portending terrible desolations and destructions to a country. But he frequently sheds his feathers, and they are carefully picked up by the proprietors of those lands where they fall, for none but those proprietors may meddle with them, and they no sooner pick them up, but they are sent to court, where they obtain a new name, and are called in a word equally difficult to pronounce as the other, but very like our English word, representative. And being placed in their proper rows, with the great feather in the center, and fitted for use, they lately obtained the venerable title of the Consolidators, and the machine itself, the Consolidator. And by that name the reader is desired for the future to let it be dignified and distinguished. I cannot, however, forbear to descant a little here on the dignity and beauty of these feathers, being such as are hardly to be seen in any part of the world, but just in these remote climates. And first, every feather has various colors, and according to the variety of the weather, are apt to look brighter and clearer, or paler and fainter, as the sun happens to look on them with a stronger or weaker aspect. The quiller head of every feather is or ought to be full of a vigorous substance, which gives spirit, and supports the brightness and color of the feather, and as this is more or less in quantity, the bright color of the feather is increased, or turns languid and pale. 'Tis true, some of those quills are exceeding empty and dry, and the humid being totally excellent, those feathers grow very useless, and insignificant in a short time. Some again are so full of wind, and puffed up with the vapor of the climate, that there's not humid enough to condense the steam, and these are so fleet, so light, and so continually fluttering and troublesome, that they greatly serve to disturb, and keep the motion unsteady. Others either placed too near the inward concealed fire, or the head of the quill being thin, the fire causes too great a fermentation, and the consequence of this is so fatal, that sometimes it mounts the engine up too fast, and endangers precipitation. But 'tis happily observed, that these ill feathers are but a very few, compared to the whole number. At the most, I never heard they were above 134 of the whole number. As for the empty ones, they are not very dangerous, but a sort of good-for-nothing feathers, that will fly when the greatest number of the rest fly, or stand still when they stand still. The fluttering hot-headed feathers are the most dangerous, and frequently struggle hard to mount the engine to extravagant heights, but still the greater number of the feathers being stanch, and well fixed, as well as well furnished, they always prevail, and check the disorders the other would bring upon the motion. So that upon the whole matter, though there are sometimes been oblique motions, variations, and sometimes great wanderings out of the way, which may make the passage tedious, yet it has always been a certain and safe voyage, and no engine was ever known to miscarry or overthrow, but that one mentioned before, and that was very much owing to the precipitate methods the prince took in guiding it, and though all the fault was laid in the feathers, and they were to blame enough, yet I never heard any wise man, but what blamed his discretion, and particularly, a certain great man has wrote three large tracts of those affairs, and called them, the History of the Opposition of the Feathers, wherein, though it was expected he would have cursed the engine itself, and all the feathers to the devil, on the contrary, he lays equal blame on the prince, who guided the chariot with so unsteady a hand, now as much too slack, as then too hard, turning them this way and that so hastily, that the feathers could not move in their proper order, and this at last put the fire in the center quite out, and so the engine overset at once. This impartiality has done great justice to the feathers, and set things in a clearer light. But of this, I shall say more, when I come to treat of the works of the learned in this lunar world. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.